silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. We're delighted to have with us this morning the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups. And if you would all stand, we would appreciate acknowledging your presence. Thank you. Please be seated. You've gotten some materials about the case you're about to hear, have you? Good, because it's just easier to understand if you know something about it to begin with. And now that we've met you, I'll introduce the court, but before I do that, we have a program, and some of you may have heard me say this earlier, called Court with Class, in which we invite high school students around the state to come visit with us, attend an oral argument, and the students have been given the briefs and other materials on the case. And as part of that program, we have a session at noon, or right after the close of this case, with a justice. And you are cordially invited to stay as long as you wish on that session. And you'll be talking about the procedures of this court, not the substance, not the merits of the case. So you're all cordially invited. And today the justice is Justice Bradley. So let me introduce the court. I'm going to start on my far left with Justice Diane Sykes. Seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. To my immediate left is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice William Babbage. To his right, Justice Anne Walsh Bradley, with whom you'll be meeting. And on the far right, Justice David Prosser. With those introductions made, I'm going to call this next case 02-0681CR, State v. Cole, and Susan Hagopian, who's an assistant state public defender, will make the initial argument. She has 25 minutes, and then we'll have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Ms. Hagopian.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Suzanne Hagopian, and I represent the defendant appellant, Tommy Cole. Tommy Cole was convicted of a drug offense that carried a presumptive minimum sentence of 3 years imprisonment. The crime was committed after the Truth in Sentencing law took effect. Consequently, that minimum sentence was subject to the requirements of the Truth in Sentencing, or TIS, statute, section 973.01. That statute requires that every sentence of imprisonment must be a bifurcated sentence consisting of both a term of prison confinement and a term of extended supervision. Now, it's undisputed in this case that the trial court's intention at sentencing was to impose the minimum term of prison confinement set by the legislature for this offense. What's in dispute is just what that minimum term of confinement is. The trial court concluded, and the state is arguing, that the 3 years must all be confinement time. Now, under that construction, the 3-year term of imprisonment specified in the statutes is not actually the presumptive minimum. The presumptive minimum is 25% longer, 3 years and 9 months, to account for the mandatory extended supervision time. Mr. Cole's construction is that the 3-year term of imprisonment is a bifurcated sentence, just like every other term of imprisonment, and that the minimum term of confinement is 75% of 3 years, or 27 months, and that the remaining 25% must be ordered as extended supervision. Now, the task for this course is to decide which construction best carries out the legislature's intent.
Ms. Hagopian, let me just raise this question. It's my understanding that the trial judge here could have given probation, right?
That's correct.
Could have given 1 year, 2 years. or anything else. Did not have to give 3 years.
That's correct. Right?
The only limitation is you can't give more than the maximum.
Right.
You don't have to give the minimum.
Right. It's presumptive.
Presumptive minimum. And the judge had to, as he or she always does, explain why you're giving the particular sentence. Right.
Mm-hmm.
This case strikes me as odd because I don't know that you'd have many cases in which a judge says, I'm giving you the minimum, and then have a dispute about what that is. I think most judges would say, I'm giving you 3 years plus, or I'm giving you 2 years or plus your, what do they call it, extended supervision. I can understand if this case involved the maximum, and it was a question whether it was 10 years plus extended supervision, whether that was the maximum. So, Mike, I have a double question. One, do you have any idea of how frequently this kind of case would arise?
I think in this particular scenario, where it would be a material factor at sentencing, not very often, for the very reason that you just recited.
Because they wouldn't say, I'm giving you the minimum and let it go at that.
Yes. However, I do think that there is a potential significant fallout should the court adopt the state's construction. And that has to do with the validity of the guilty and no contest pleas that were entered during this 3-year-plus period before they abolished most of the minimum sentences.
Because they're advised of what the sentence will be.
That's right. And under State v. Moore, we know that the plea is not valid unless the person understands the term of the presumptive minimum. And here, for example, Mr. Cole was told that it was 3 years. But under the state's construction, it's more than that. It's 3 years and 9 months.
What was he told precisely at the place where he was told anything?
At the plea hearing?
Yeah.
He was told that it was a presumptive minimum, and that's on the plea questionnaire.
What?
Presumptive minimum sentence of 3 years.
In prison.
3 years in prison, right.
Imprisonment. Okay.
Right.
In prison rather than in imprisonment.
Well,
is there a difference, or am I just making something up? Is that your argument?
I know that on the plea questionnaire it read presumptive minimum 3 years. At the plea hearing, what it said was that I can order you to spend up to 30 years in prison and not less than 3 years.
Yeah, so I was going to ask the same question on page 5 in the red brief, that Judge Senkovich sentenced Cole to a 3-year term of confinement. And then there was a post-conviction motion where he wanted resentencing because the judge erroneously believed that the presumptive minimum of confinement was 3 years, and then Judge Senkovich then denied that motion. That's your understanding of what happened.
That's right. But throughout this process, nobody has backed away from the idea that the court's intention at sentencing was to impose the presumptive minimum, whatever it is.
Well, did Judge Senkovich say 3 years?
He say 3 years where?
Did he say that the 3-year term of confinement, did he indicate that in the record?
He imposed a 3-year term of confinement.
Did he say 3 years? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I know that's what the judgment of conviction provides.
My next question is, just tell me for my, as far as extended supervision, does that involve any confinement?
Does extended supervision involve confinement?
Yes.
If the extended supervision is revoked.
Only if it's violated. So it's only requires confinement if it is revoked, right? So there has to be a revocation.
Right.
Otherwise, how is it served?
It served in the community, though the term of confinement could also be extended for bad behavior mm-hmm. in prison. Mm-hmm. But whatever is set as extended supervision, you know, you're going to serve your full term of confinement, which cannot be shortened, could be lengthened for bad behavior. Then you're released in the community, and if you're revoked, then you can be returned to prison for the full remaining term of that total sentence minus what you'd already served.
And you're talking there just of extended supervision, because the confinement part of the sentence is 3 years. Whether there's – that's – I'm talking about the prison portion. Just so we're, I understand
in
exactly.
terms of what he was sentenced to, yes. Yes. And I guess I just sort of to make it clear in terms of the impact of this case, again, I don't think it has a large impact in terms of resentencings. This is a unique situation where the judge really wanted to impose a term of confinement equal to what the legislature has set it at. And, of course, we know that the legislature has since abolished virtually all of the minimum sentences. So this is not going to be a recurring issue. But for the impact that it may have on the validity of the guilty and no contest pleas, because under the state's construction, the minimum sentences are not what the statutes say they are. They're all 25% longer, and I think we can be pretty confident in assuming that the judges are informing defendants that the presumptive minimum is what the statute on its plain on its face says, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, not all 25% longer.
What is the longest presumptive minimum now? In the chart here that the state gave us, it shows 3 years indeterminate. What is the longest presumptive minimum?
The longest presumptive minimum pre the second TIS legislation, and my understanding was a 10-year confinement time.
I'm now, asking that to see whether, you know, how many people we're talking about.
And I say a 10-year term of imprisonment. And I think since you referred to the state's submission, I'd just like to make 2 points on that. One is I don't agree with how they're construing Mr. Cole's construction of this in terms of the extended supervision time. Our construction is that when you're bifurcating this minimum sentence, you apply the formula of 75%, 25%. So it's 75% has to be ordered as confinement, and the remaining 25% is ordered as extended supervision. And by doing that, then, of course, you come up with the full term of the minimum sentence of imprisonment. And the second point I'd like to make is that had this chart continued on, I think it would further illustrate sort of the concern we have is that, you know, if this court goes down the path of essentially rewriting the minimum sentences, we come up with some pretty big differences. I mean, for a three-year sentence that the statute says it's 3 years and 9 months, for a five-year minimum that the statute says it would be 6 years and 3 months is really the minimum sentence. For a 10-year term of imprisonment set in the statute, it's really a 12-and-a-half-year minimum term of imprisonment. So that's some significant rewriting that I think should give the court some serious pause. And I would ask sort of that the court sort of use as a guiding principle in deciding this case the rules of lenity and strict construction.
When you say rewriting, the state is rewriting, when I'm looking at the state's brief on page 22, you talk about the inference, and the state indicates, and it seems to me, having some background with sentencing and the interpretation. The state says that the drafting history was intended to apply only to minimum terms of confinement for bifurcated sentences to prison and not to a combination of confinement and extended supervision. In other words, they say that there would have been no need to change the word imprisonment to confinement in prison. So you disagree with that by your past.
No, that's not really the rewriting I'm referring to, but
The inference is that, I mean, when we talk about inferences, and they're talking about an inference there that we're talking about the confinement portion of this is confinement to prison rather than tacking on the, as you're saying, the extended supervision.
Well, I think that that change in the title of 2B is an appropriate correction. Correction in the terminology. I don't think anybody's disputing that 2B is referring to how you determine the term of confinement. But when you look at the overall structure of a TIS sentence as set forth in sub 1, I think it becomes clear that the term imprisonment or imprisoned has a very specific meaning, which is a bifurcated sentence consisting of two parts, confinement and extended supervision. And I think as the state has acknowledged that under their construction, they are assigning two meanings to the single word imprisoned as it appears in the penalty statutes, that it means confinement only when we're talking about the minimum, but confinement and supervision when we're talking about the maximum and apparently anything in between. Our construction assigns one meaning to the word imprisonment, consistent with what's in subsection 1 of the TIS statute, so that whether you're talking about the maximum, the minimum, somewhere in between, it's always going to be a bifurcated sentence. So confinement plus supervision equals imprisonment. That's the meaning of imprisonment.
I just have one other question before we proceed, if I might. And I'll also ask this of Mr. Freiman. As you know, this law came into effect in 99. We haven't had many, if we've had any, cases on TIS, so my familiarity with the statute has limitations. I want to know whether our interpretation of this statute will affect interpretation of any other provisions in the statute. It's a same way of different way of asking the same question, namely, what effect does this interpretation have? Because that seems to me very important. It would be important under any circumstances.
I think that the court's interpretation has a pretty limited impact, other than the guilty plea, no contest plea problem I've cited. And I think that's largely because in the second wave of TIS legislation, the legislature abolished virtually all of the minimum sentences. And, of course, this only comes into play when we're talking about a minimum sentence to imprisonment in the state prisons. And there's very little left that comes into play. And I think it's very telling how the legislature in that second wave of TIS legislation dealt with two of the few remaining presumptive minimum sentences that we have. And those are in sections 939.623 and 939.624. They concern repeat serious sex crimes and repeat serious violent crimes. Now, at the time of the first TIS legislation, the language of those statutes read very much like the penalty provision at issue here, that the person was to be sentenced to not less than 5 years imprisonment very much like the drug code penalty, not less than 5 years imprisonment. In Mr. Cole's case, not less than 3 years imprisonment. Well, when the legislature in the second wave retained these two minimum sentences, it rewrote them to state that the court shall impose a bifurcated sentence under 973.01. And then it went on to say that the term of confinement in prison portion of a bifurcated sentence imposed under this subsection may not be less than 3 years and 6 months. So what they've done is they've clarified what we say was the intent all along, is that this 5-year period of imprisonment was intended to be a bifurcated sentence. The term of confinement should be roughly 75%, 66%, it's in that ballpark. The 3 years and 6 months falls right in between. And there's a real logic to that, because the 66%, or two-thirds, is the amount of time that an individual would have served on a maximum sentence before reaching their mandatory release date. And it's clear from the report of the Criminal Penalties Study Committee that the intention in the second wave of TIS legislation was to have the maximum terms of confinement roughly parallel what an individual would have served to their mandatory release date under the previous indeterminate sentence. And they used what they describe as the MR converter. Okay? So we know that this, what was intended here is that we would roughly parallel what you were going to serve before in arriving at the new maximum term of confinement. Makes perfect sense, but it also guides us in terms of interpreting the minimum sentence, because under Mr. Cole's construction, we've accomplished that same result, that on this 3-year, now bifurcated sentence, the individual is serving roughly what they would have served to reach their MR date under an indeterminate sentence. It's still a little more, okay? There's no decrease in time here. Before they would have...
A couple of months, right.
They would have served 2 years to MR on a 3-year sentence. Now they'd serve 2 years and 3 months. So, and keep in mind that that individual with the 3-month minimum sentence in our former indeterminate scheme would also have been eligible for parole after 1/4 of the sentence, or 9 months. So the range of that sentence was 9 months to 2 years. Well, we've done away with parole, and we've got a system of certainty. So Mr. Cole, under a 3-year sentence, would have to serve 27 months as the presumptive minimum. Confinement, yes.
And how many months under extended supervision?
Then 9 months, because that's the remaining 25% that's left, and that would be ordered as extended supervision.
So you object to the chart that says it's 6 3/4 months?
Exactly, exactly. Now,
add up to 36 months.
That's right. And in all fairness to the state, I mean, there's a logic to what they did there, because the TIS statute refers to the term of extended supervision not being less than 25% of the term of confinement. But I don't think that's an acceptable approach, that the legislature would have intended that when you apply the 75-25 formula to a minimum sentence, you've got to come out to what the minimum is as set in the statutes.
Now, if we should hold your way, counsel, does that raise more challenges to the guilty pleas in these last 3 years, or less?
Much less, because, if any, I don't know that they'd have any complaint, because they would have been told that the presumptive minimum was 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, And as far as my understanding of the law is at this point, that's all they have to be told. They don't have to be told that there's, you know, what the minimum term of confinement is or the maximum term of confinement. They have to be told the term of imprisonment, and they would have been told that correctly.
Well, don't, are you using the term imprisonment correctly when you're just sentenced? You mean maximum terms in confinement is what they have to be told.
No, my understanding is what they have
That's
to be told is the term of imprisonment,
which means confinement plus
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. So if they were told that the minimum presumptive was 3 years, you think that's right? That was truth in sentencing.
Maybe. Yes.
Okay. If they're told their maximum is 10 years, right? Are they told what the maximum penalty is at a plea hearing?
Yeah, they would need to be told the maximum.
If they're told the maximum is 10 years, then they have to interpret that as less than, that they won't be confined for more than 10. They will not be confined for more than 10.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any case that has said that to have a valid plea, you have to be told of the calculation to arrive at the confinement term.
I don't quite understand. You seem to be equating extended supervision with confinement in your analysis here, because you're saying that they have to be told of the minimum term of confinement. And you're saying that includes extended supervision. That's what I hear you say.
What I'm trying to say is they have to be told of the presumptive minimum sentence, which is a 3-year term of imprisonment. So they would have to be told it's the 3-year term of imprisonment would be the confinement plus the extended supervision.
The 3-year term of imprisonment?
Right.
Would include extended supervision?
That's right. Because
why is imprisonment equated with extended supervision? They're not imprisoned.
Because that's what the legislature has used as the terminology under the TIS
that's
statute.
That's sentencing. You think imprisonment means in prison. It doesn't. I-M-P-R-I-S-O-N means in prison.
I mean, really,
plus
extended.
Plus extended.
I think
is that in 97301?
97301. I mean, it's
where
really.
Where does it say that in 97301?
Okay, it says in that says bifurcated sentence required. Whenever a court sentences a person to imprisonment in the Wisconsin state prisons for a felony committed after, blah blah, the court shall impose a bifurcated sentence that consists of a term of confinement in prison, followed by a term of extended supervision. So imprisonment is confinement plus extended supervision. And the Court of Appeals has...
That's a jump that I don't see.
Well, you don't have to rely just on me. The Court of Appeals had said that in State versus Volk, which is cited in the brief. The Criminal Penalties Study Committee says it several times in their report that that's what imprisonment means. It's really a term of art. But you know what? It's not a radical, it's not really a new concept, because look at, we've had that term in our penalty provisions for as long as I've been around, and that imprisonment meant under our indeterminate sentence, the time you're going to serve before you reach your release date and your parole. So, you know, the maximum term of imprisonment of, you know, 10 years was not all going to be served in prison, because you had your mandatory release date at 2/3 of that. So imprisonment has always been a combination of prison confinement and time under supervision in the community.
Does the state agree with you on that?
State agrees.
The state agrees that that's what imprisonment means for everything but the minimum sentences.
Okay.
And you'll correct me if I'm wrong.
I have just another question. So if the maximum penalty is 10 years, What is the maximum a judge can give a prisoner, give a convicted person? What's the maximum sentence?
Okay. If the maximum is 10 years.
Right.
Right. Then the most that the court can give is confinement, that would be an unclassified felony, is 75% of that.
Okay, 7.5 years.
Seven and
right.
a half years.
Plus and 2.5 ES.
Right. If you're talking about a minimum, a presumptive or mandatory minimum.
No, I'm talking about a maximum.
Okay. Then it would be 7.5 years for the maximum term of confinement, and the extended supervision time may not be less than 25% of
7.5.
The 7.5 years.
So your argument switches at that point.
Yes, it does. It does. What it does is to say what we've picked out of the statute. I mean, it's obviously this is not the model of clarity in drafting here, but what we've done is to pull out the formula of 75 and 25. And admittedly, with a little tweaking, it works quite nicely for the minimum sentences and really does carry out the legislature's intent in terms of the amount of time that individuals would be expected to serve in confinement.
Thank you, counsel.
Okay.
Just
one more point of clarification. With respect to your argument that this is going to cause some havoc with previously sentenced defendants, are you saying that the court had to inform them that they would serve 3 years and then an additional 25% of ES, and if they didn't tell them that,
they don't have to break it down like that, but they have to tell them what the minimum term of imprisonment is. And under the state's construction, it's not 3 years anymore. It's 25% more than that.
So they have to tell them that you're going to serve 3 years of imprisonment and, what is it,
nine months.
But I don't think they have to break it out like that. They'd have to say the presumptive minimum sentence is 3 years and 9 months, period.
Okay. And quite obviously they didn't tell them. Most of them have.
They wouldn't be told that because the statutes don't say that.
Assistant Attorney General.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I am Assistant Attorney General James Freimuth, representing Respondent State of Wisconsin. I'm a little nervous. I don't know exactly where to begin with this.
Just rest assured this is a calming experience.
And I have to admit the state's position is going to be a little bit schizophrenic, and I have to apologize for that because it wasn't until yesterday afternoon that I fully comprehended that the consequence here in terms of cases affected by sentencing or the need for resentencing is probably going to be minimal because it's only going to be involved in cases where the court has said it wants to impose the presumptive minimum.
That's right, and that would be unusual.
That would be unusual.
And staying with it on the motion for resentencing would be unusual, too, because the judge could have just said, hey, my real intent was to give him X, and that would have been the end of this case.
Right? Correct.
Okay.
Correct. This is very unusual. I think the consequence that I had thought wrongheadedly about before in doing the brief that I now have thought differently about is this, the effect on guilty pleas. The state's position here is, and I think that our position in terms of what the statute means is correct, but it could have this unintended consequence of causing guilty pleas to be uninformed. But I'm not certain about that because we haven't briefed the issue, and I'm not certain that when a court is telling a defendant at the guilty plea colloquy what the punishment is. Clearly, the total maximum punishment has to be told. But with respect to the presumptive minimum, at least under truth in sentencing, It's not clear to me, at least, whether telling the defendant that the bottom floor minimum confinement time you get is this 3 years that's in the statute, which Mr. Cole was told, or if they have to tell him 3 years plus one-fourth of that, and that one-fourth 9 months is going to be spent on extended supervision.
Well, why should the state argue for a position that potentially could be stepping on the tail of a sleeping dog?
I agree, and that's the concern that I wrestled with in the past 24 hours, because that's when I first contemplated it. I think because it's a not clear answer that it's going to cause that problem, it's more of a risk, I guess. And I'm just not sure where that risk leads the state. But you're right. I mean, I guess we're probably better off, but even this I'm not sure of. That is that if the defense position is correct, and I'll get into the numbers issue in a minute, but if the defense position is correct, and or partly correct, if the defense position is that it's 75% of the 3 years, that's the minimum, 75% is confinement time, we disagree with the defense that the one-fourth then is just the difference of that 3 years or that 75%, 25%. In other words, we disagree that it's 27 months confinement, 9 months extended supervision. We say that under the statutes, the 25% extended supervision has to be taken from the confinement time. So the irony of this is that the defense position is always going to have come up with a presumptive minimum that's less than 3 years when you add together confinement and extended supervision, and the state's always going to come up with one that's greater than 3 years. That's the problem.
So go figure.
And my concern is if the defendant is told that the presumptive minimum is higher than what it really is for him, in other words, if he's told it's 3 years but it's really 33 and three-quarter months, is that going to cause a potential problem for guilty pleas, even though you would think that it would be less at risk than if he was told less than what he than what the state's position would be? That's the concern that's not addressed in the briefs, but that's the concern the state has.
Well, is that a concern that we should be we should be looking at? But basically, as I asked your opposing counsel, when one reads a statute, and then I'm looking at your brief on page 2122, you seem to come to the conclusion, because we have to look at what the legislature, what was their intent or what did they order, I assume the Truth in Sentencing Commission, but basically the legislature, what was their idea here?
And this is where the state's position would become schizophrenic, because we believe that, as argued in the brief, what the legislature intended was for presumptive minimums to be confinement time. But the problem that I don't think anybody foresaw, if that is correct, is that this could then pose a problem for guilty plea colloquies. But if that, in fact, is what the defendant has to be told, is that it's that whole package, not just the confinement time.
Now, unless, let me ask you this question. Unless a judge is going to sentence the way Judge Sankovic sentenced, why can't the judge say the minimum presumptive is 3 years, right?
That's what he did, yes.
And say nothing about confinement or ES. Just like he says the maximum is whatever it is, 8 years, right?
Yes.
Doesn't say the maximum is 8 years, meaning three-quarters of that is going to be in a prison, and one-fourth of the maximum is going to, not one-fourth of the confinement, but one-fourth of the maximum is going to be ES, which is going to be more than the maximum stated in, which is more than the maximum stated in the statute. That is, you are subject to the control of the state for more than 10 years, right?
That's the maximum. I think that's right. I'm not sure that I follow 100%
okay.
on that.
The maximum penalty in the statute is 10 years.
Okay.
Can you tell that
for the maximum, for the maximum.
Yeah, you tell them.
And
the person does not know how much, if he got the maximum, he will be under the supervision of the state. And he will be under the supervision of the state for more than 10 years if he gets the maximum, because he's going to get 7.5 in confinement, if he's given the maximum?
Yes. Go ahead.
And 1/4 of 7.5, which will be another umpteen. 1/4 of the 10, which is, my math isn't good enough. He may be in for more than 10 years. Maybe the imprisonment. No?
I don't think so.
So the maximum that he can get of ES plus confinement is 10?
Is 10, I think so.
Okay, fine. In fact, if that's what's happening.
For maximums, under unclassifieds.
Yeah.
This isn't a problem for classifieds because they, fortunately for classifieds in TIS 1, they said what the maximum confinement was and what the maximum total imprisonment was. So you can easily figure out the difference in what your maximum ES would be. What gets tricky is when you start, I'm sorry.
Well, why do you have to tell the defendant anything more?
I think for maximums, you just have to make sure the defendant knows the total imprisonment, the total maximum penalty the defendant faces. Under the world of TIS 1, whether that would mean telling the defendant the maximum confinement time only, I don't know, but I'm sure the way it's being done for the unclassifieds in TIS 1 is they're being told that number that's in the statute, mm-hmm. which in this case was a 30-year maximum.
Mm-hmm.
The problem comes when you have the presumptive minimums because then you've got a bottom
right.
that you're dealing with and not a top.
Here, unless I misinterpreted what opposing counsel indicated, she said, well, that the 3 years was actually on the sentencing, you know, it's, but when I was reading in her brief on page 112, it says, and this is Judge, I believe it's got to be Judge Senkovich talking here, that he's going over what he's going to do, and he talks about that, well, I don't believe you need 7 years. I believe it's appropriate to follow the presumptive minimum the legislature has told us, and that is the law that the community has adopted, that for someone who is a drug dealer in this weight range, then he says 3 years in prison is appropriate. So there's no question. I mean, I'm talking about what Judge Senkovich thought, and then he goes on to talk about the presumptive minimum, but he's talking about to the defendant, you know, 3 years in prison is appropriate unless we believe that the public would be served or at least not harmed by departing from that minimum. Then he goes on to say, you're a drug dealer. You're the drug dealer we have in mind when we pass the laws.
Yes. Yeah, I think you could construe that either of two ways. Because he uses the word presumptive minimum in the same discussion here, it could mean that he's saying that he views the 3 years in prison, which is what he wants to give him, mm-hmm. as being the presumptive minimum. That's the way I interpreted it.
And because he talks about other sentences, what he could do, you know, he says he mentions this number. That's why.
But let's clarify that.
Sure.
What the state's position is, because as I understand Justice Wilcox's question, I don't think that's what the state's relying on. I understand the question to be that, hey, you look at the sentencing transcript and the judge at the outset says something, and let me get the exact words, I suppose, that is 3 years of, I don't have the exact words, but you are not relying on words in this transcript. If the judge says 3 years in prison, that's what the intent of the judge was. You are taking the position that the intent of the judge was to give the presumptive minimum. And now the fight here is over how you define that. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Sure.
Presumptive minimum term of confinement is prison. Yeah, is what,
let me just,
that's the way I read it.
That's correct. And I don't disagree with that. I'm just pointing out, but because there's some inference here on the bench that Judge Senkovich didn't know, but Judge Senkovich did think about it and put it into words. That's what I'm
correct.
Talking about.
I think, I mean, if this had been a case, and I think there was a previous one out of Milwaukee County that went through the Court of Appeals unpublished, where they talked about what the presumptive minimum was again, but then the trial court said, well, whatever it is, I'm going to impose above it. This wouldn't be here if we weren't talking exactly what that presumptive minimum means. And that's the way I interpreted what the judge was saying in this case.
And then on motion for reconsideration, he issued or he explained it because the issue arose. Maybe it was a motion for reconsideration, but he issued an order explaining what his understanding of presumptive minimum was.
I think so, but I have to admit I hadn't looked back at the post-conviction to.
And you're supporting the judge's interpretation?
Yes, we agree that presumptive minimums mean confinement. And there's there's what gets tricky about this, and I'll get into apart from the guilty plea consequence that we're concerned about, obviously, but in terms of the statutory intent, if the guilty plea consequence wasn't out there, and granted it's a concern, if we were just looking at what the legislature meant by looking at the language and the history and so forth, not consequences. There are three types of statutes that are unclassified felonies, felony meaning that it's punishable by at least, or it could be punishable by a year in prison. That's a felony. There are three types of these statutes. One of them is the one in this case where the presumptive minimum is greater than 1 year, and of course the maximum is also greater than 1 year. The second category is the one where the presumptive minimum is exactly 1 year and the maximum is greater.
The maximum,
is obviously greater than the presumptive minimum of 1 year. And the third category is the one where they say shall not be imprisoned for less than 6 months nor more than 7.5 years, for example. There are several statutes that fall into that pattern. The point that the state makes from that is you can't use the word imprisoned. I mean, the fact that the word imprisoned is being used, especially in that latter case, to refer both to a jail term of 6 months and a maximum prison sentence that has to be bifurcated has to mean that imprisoned is being used in two different meanings in that passage. So I don't think it's fair to say that the state's position has to fail because under a canon of statutory construction, the state is construing one word in two different ways in the same sentence.
Why is that? When you say that, is it because you have to be in a prison for 1 year to make it a felony? I mean, why are you saying that?
Well, the two categories that are affected in the way the state's saying is the exactly 1 year minimum and the less than 1 year minimum. There are some statutes that say shall not be imprisoned for less than 6 months. That cannot be a bifurcated sentence to prison because it's got to be a felony, and it's got to be a sentence to prison before you start using bifurcation. So for the six-month presumptive minimum, it has to be all confinement time in the sense of jail time.
Let me see if I understand this. Your position and the defense position with regard to how you define maximum imprisonment is the same.
I think so.
Both you and the defense, with regard to maximum imprisonment, say that it includes a period of being incarcerated plus extended supervision. So your definition of imprisonment as applied to maximum is the same. It's bifurcated. Is that correct?
Yes.
But when you define imprisonment for minimum, the defense says, well, it's the same. I'll define it bifurcated for maximum and bifurcated for minimum. But you say, no, for maximum, we're going to say it means two things, but for minimum, we're going to say it means one thing. And
why? Why?
Why? Because that is not
intuitive.
Usually when you use the same word in the same section defining the same thing, it usually means the same thing.
Right. Well, the first indicia is the one I just talked about, and that's where you got the word imprisoned referring to a non-bifurcated sentence to jail in the very same phrase that you're talking about, a maximum bifurcated sentence. That doesn't answer the question, but it shows that there's an ambiguity here and needs to be resolved.
Both sides say it's ambiguous.
Sure, right. I think so. We certainly think so.
You think there are two reasonable explanations or more?
I'm sorry.
You think there are two or more reasonable explanations?
I think it's tough. I mean, I think, obviously, I wouldn't be here if I didn't think our position was the stronger, more reasonable, if you will. But I think it's fair to say that both are reasonable. And again, I put this caveat, but for the guilty plea consequence that we hadn't thought about from our interpretation. But to get to the explanation for Justice Bradley's question of why we construe this the way we do.
Let me just pause. I think I may have misspoke. I think maybe the defense says it's unambiguous, that it's unambiguously sets forth a legislation.
That's why I wasn't sure about that. I would beg to differ because if you just looked at the word imprisoned without knowing about truth in sentencing or anything else, and the word imprisoned never changed from indeterminate sentencing to truth in sentencing, you could read the precise penalty provision here that we're talking about to mean everything is a term of confinement. Shall be imprisoned for not less than 3 years nor more than 30 years. That's one reading you could give to this. The reason the state hasn't done that with the maximums is because of the only thing that was changed as a result of TIS 1 was to increase the maximum total imprisonment. And based on the documents that I believe are in my appendix, the suggestion was that the study committee, at least, wanted to increase the maximums. And this is important also because it gets into why we're taking the position we're taking. The maximums are increased for classifieds such that the new, in TIS-1, that the new confinement term matches what used to be the total imprisonment term under indeterminate sentencing. So for Class B felony, 40 years under indeterminate sentencing, under TIS-1 is 40 years confinement. For unclassified felonies, which is what we're concerned about, they left that language alone for those, for minimums, but they increased the maximums. So in our case, I think the former indeterminate maximum for this drug offense, the former penalty section read, shall not be less than 3 years nor more than 20 years, I believe. Now, it reads, shall not be less than 3 years nor more than 30 years. And we've accepted the proposition. We believe that the legislature intended the maximum to reflect this new bifurcated sentencing language. But that's where the ambiguity comes in. The ambiguity comes in because now truth in sentencing part one, at least, suggests that what we're talking about is bifurcated sentencing where you've got confinement and extended supervision, and this whole package is called imprisonment, which is what gets confusing. Even the legislature itself got confused in Chapter 973 because where it's clearly talking about confinement, it uses the word imprisonment.
Well, that makes sense. Most people think imprisonment means you're behind bars.
Sure. But part of the reason we're taking the position we're taking on the statutory interpretation is the specific provision, and I think it's 973.012b, but where it talks about the term of confinement shall be not less than 1 year subject to the existing minimums. I'll get the precise language, but that's the provision. That provision is talking about the confinement portion. That's what leads us to say, well, if they wanted to make the presumptive minimum language applicable to the whole thing, why didn't they call it subject to the existing to imprisonment? But they matched it with confinement.
Could you explain exactly what the obligation of the court is in a guilty plea or a plea in no contest with respect to the spectrum of sentence? What does the court have to tell the defendant?
In Wisconsin, as I understand the current state of the law, which is all before truth in sentencing, the court has to tell the defendant at the colloquy the total possible imprisonment. With respect to the presumptive minimum, there's one case that talks about this, one published decision that I'm aware of that's cited in a footnote in the state's brief, State versus Moore, M-O-H-R, out of District 2. There, the Court of Appeals said that the court should tell the defendant in the colloquy what the presumptive minimum, this is indeterminate sentence now, presumptive minimum is. In this case, that would have been, still be expressed as shall not be less than 3 years. In the Moore decision, the Court of Appeals suggests that the court explain that the presumptive minimum is not a mandatory minimum, meaning that the court could go below that presumptive minimum if it found good reasons to do so, or there's more precise language, but essentially that kind of impact. But I just to finish that thought real quick, is that nothing, of course, in truth, there's been no truth in sentencing decision that addresses what has to be said during a plea colloquy to make the plea sound. And that's where our concern comes in, is whether they have, if we're right, and even if we're wrong, regardless of which, what the right answer is, what the defendant has to be told with respect to the presumptive minimum is still open, I think.
And that's not before us.
It's not before you in this case.
All right. Although, as you both say, it may affect 3 years of guilty pleas.
I'm afraid of that, yes.
Only where there's unclassified crime with a minimum presumptive, a presumptive minimum.
Right. It would, even narrower than that, I think it only is going to apply to, I try to be comprehensive here, it's only TIS-1, the 3-year period between for crimes committed between December, on or after December
1999
and February 1st, 2003. That's one limitation. The other limitation is that it only applies to unclassified felonies that we're concerned with, and it only applies to unclassified felonies where the presumptive minimum is at least 1 year or more.
Well, that's an awful lot. I would assume over 3 years you've got a lot of guilty pleas in that category.
You're probably right, and I don't have a number, but that's the concern, obviously.
Okay, and perhaps the court's technology system can tell us that, but really that's only for interest because we're looking at the law at the moment. And I want to just make sure that what we say only affects these 3 years, only affects unclassified, and only affects presumptive minimum. I am concerned whether what we say will affect classified with or without presumptive minimums, and I just don't know the law well enough to tell you whether there are any of those, and that it doesn't affect the maximum. That's what I'm the point of my question.
Yeah, I had thought.
I want to know what it does, because then I know I have
for
to
the
know
classified.
How much of this statute I have to look at.
Right.
Right?
Correct. Yeah, and for the classifieds, quite honestly, I haven't looked back to see what the normal colloquy says. If it's the classifieds clearly say 40, like for a Class B felony, 40 years confinement, and in 939 where they say for Class B felony, I think it says total imprisonment of 60 years.
Which means so, 20 years of ES.
Which is could be the maximum ES that,
no,
I'm sorry. It's not necessarily the maximum ES. It just means that whatever the maximum confinement is, and if you impose that maximum, then you have to impose at least one-fourth of that as extended supervision. I don't think it limits, I think that's one of the problems that was trying to be cured with TIS-1, is that it doesn't limit extended supervision. I mean, you could have, in other words, I think for the 40-year, or the 60-year, Class B, total 60 years, 40 years confinement, you could have, I think, a one-year confinement and a 59-year extended supervision, I think.
60 is the max.
60 is the max.
Both.
I think that's the way that works. And that was part of the concern here, is that would be really, you wouldn't necessarily want to do that, I don't think. I don't know. But that's my understanding of how the math works for TIS-1.
You don't think this case affects everything else?
I don't think, to be honest, I haven't thought it through, and I'm trying to think it through now, but I don't have a good
answer.
Not
easy, and we've had a number of sessions for judges, as you very well know,
right.
An attempt to do the mathematics on all of this.
Does the definition of imprisonment have any effect on the procedures for revocation off of extended supervision?
I'm not sure. Could you say that once more? I'm not sure I fully understand, I guess.
Under the old intensive sanctions program, the statute spoke in terms of imprisonment. A sentence to intensive sanctions was a sentence of imprisonment, even though the defendant was not in prison. And the reason for that, as I understand the law, is so that there could be truncated due process to revoke off of intensive sanctions to put the defendant back in custody. So that's why I asked the question. The definition of imprisonment for purposes of the bifurcated sentence may or may not have some impact on the due process that's afforded a defendant who is being sanctioned in some way while on extended supervision.
If I understand correctly, my impression is that the reason they use imprisonment is because once the defendant is completed confinement, for example, and goes on extended supervision and does something wrong, they can be revoked and returned to prison, so that the maximum ceiling of imprisonment is actually that combination because of that possibility.
But under Truth in Sentencing 2, there are some intermediate sanctions that can be imposed.
Yeah, and I, to be honest, I can't speak to them because I haven't reviewed it closely enough to know what those all are. But
we're not up to 2 yet, right?
I'm sorry?
We're not up to 2.
No, but I think you need to think about it just in terms of...
We are talking about the generic definition of imprisonment in 973.01, right? For purposes of the presumptive minimum, I recognize
right.
The...
It's, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think... Our position is that imprisoned is being used in 2 different ways, depending upon what it is that's being talked about, whether it's the presumptive minimum or the maximum sentence. And the reason we're saying it's being 2 ways is because Truth in Sentencing gave the word imprisonment a new meaning that encompasses not just the old idea of...
Well, let me follow up on that, because
sure.
Under sentencing law in our statutes, even under old indeterminate sentencing, imprisonment didn't mean imprisonment. It didn't mean time in prison.
Correct. Because you got
time in prison plus time on parole.
You had 2/3 mandatory release for prison sentences.
And discretionary parole.
And discretionary parole
one quarter
as well.
Of sentence.
It wasn't an absolute, right?
So, your argument is that for purposes of the mandatory minimums or presumptive minimums, imprisonment means confinement.
Correct.
And in our law, imprisonment has never meant confinement.
That's a good point, and I don't have a very strong response to that. Certainly the analogy that opposing counsel has put forth, that even under indeterminate sentencing, you have that, just what you described. I don't have an answer that would distinguish that in some way to make our argument different. I just think that in TIS-1, when they didn't touch the word imprisoned and they didn't touch presumptive minimums, at least a reasonable interpretation of that, given all the possibilities with the less than 6 months and so forth, is that it was referring to confinement time. But I don't have a good answer for you.
Do you have any response to Ms. Agopian's argument about what the legislature left intact in terms of presumptive minimums, the sex offender?
And she's absolutely right. In TIS-2, what happened was they did away with all, the legislature, that is, did away with all presumptive minimums for that would result in felonies. I think the motor vehicle stuff is still 6 months or less. The only 2 felony situations are the 2 that opposing counsel described, and in there what they did was they specified it expressly in terms of a term of confinement and a term of extended supervision, and she also is correct that those terms would match her closer to her argument now, because I think they took, like, in one of them was a 5 years, and now it becomes 3 years something plus whatever the ES portion of that was. Before leaving this argument, I just want to, I think the math question on the original issue of what the defense position really means is that it does mean that you would have, for the 3-year, just take the 3-year example, that you have 27 months confinement. But it doesn't mean that you therefore have 9 months of extended supervision, not unless you're going to read out of the statute that one provision it's like sub D of 973.012, that says the 25% must be 1/4 of the confinement imposed. So under her calculation, under her interpretation, the calculations are always going to actually end up less than 3 years.
It was my understanding that one of the points of changing the law was so that the judge, the victim, the defendant, and the public would know how long the person was going to be locked up
right.
And when you can expect them back on the street. because, you know, the famous joke was you give him 50 years, and how much time does he serve? You know, 5 days. Of course, that was not true, but that was the general perception, or so stated. And that the whole point was to, everybody knows, and it's certain, once the judge makes the pronouncement. Let's start out with that as an assumption. I'm recognizing I can be wrong. So if that's what I think the general intent was, how do you interpret this law to conform to that intent?
I think for classified felonies where they made it clear that confinement means you're not going to get out before. This is the minimum amount of, I hate to use the word minimum, but you're going to serve at least that confinement time in prison. That's the most certainty that you can get out of
and
this.
And that's right in the statute.
That's in the statute.
If I understand you. What do you do with the unclassified to presumptive minimum to get, if I'm right about the intent, generally stated, how do you interpret the statute to do that?
To make it certain?
Well, yeah, so that everybody knows.
To know confinement.
The victim knows, the prison knows, the public knows, the newspapers know, everybody knows.
Well, I think it's difficult because of the way that the minimum is expressed. You don't have a problem when you use one number for a maximum and you say that 75% of that maximum is confinement. When you have a minimum, it's not clear. Depends on which you do first. If you say the minimum is only confinement time, like we're saying, then I say it's perfectly clear that 3 years minimum is 3 years confinement. If it's not perfectly clear, if it means that 3 years has to be bifurcated, then you have to do the same thing as you would do with the maximum. So it isn't perfectly clear, I think.
But the judge, though, is statutorily required to explain the specific bifurcation in the specific sentence that is imposed.
Right.
So in that sense, the certainty purpose is served.
I think so.
The judge doesn't agree here, or at least it's potential that there are two constructions. Thank you, and I'm sorry to have kept you over.
Could I ask one more question?
Sorry, Justice Presser.
Under the former language that we're concerned with here, in 961.41.1 CM3, how long had that phrase, not less than 3 years, no more than 30 years, been in the statute?
When did that originate? I don't have an answer, I'm sorry. I haven't looked back to see when it first became part of the statute, you mean? For the indeterminate, I don't know. I'd be happy to, I should qualify, I'd be happy to look it up and send a letter too if the court would like. That'd be fine. That would be fine.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Gopian?
Well, the state's construction is really premised on a theory that the statute is ambiguous. And if that's right, Mr. Cole should win. And I don't mean to be flip about that, but we're talking here about a penalty. And when the legislature has not spoken clearly and definitively as to what that penalty is, the court must accept the less harsh construction. And that, of course, is just applying the rules of lenity and strict construction. I think it's hard to say with a straight face here that the harsher penalty advocated for by the state is mandated by the statute's clear and definite language. I don't think the state is even saying that. So this really is a case where the rule of lenity and strict construction in the end carries the day. Court has two interpretations of the penalty, one with a harsher, one with a milder penalty. And because setting the penalty is so uniquely within the hands of the legislature, that this court must accept the construction that imposes the milder penalty. And then, of course, there's the practical consideration as to the can of worms that is opened up if the court accepts a construction with a harsher penalty than appears in the statutes. For those reasons, I would strongly suggest that the court should adopt Mr. Cole's construction, apply the 75-25% formula, and conclude that the presumptive minimum was not 3 years, as the court believed, but it was a minimum confinement time of 27 months, so that the remedy that we're seeking is for the court to reverse the judgment of conviction, the order denying post-conviction motion, and a remand for resentencing with then the instructions from this court what the minimum term of confinement really is. Unless there's any questions?
You have one question. The problem that arises in response to your opposing counsel's later comments in this argument deals, in my mind, not with the period of confinement, but with the period of extended supervision. I thought that you were arguing that here the three-year minimum would be 27 months and, I guess, 9 months extended supervision. But that's not apparently what the statute says. 973.01, whatever it is, then D, defines extended supervision as 25% of the length of the term of confinement. Now, what do you do with that?
That's right.
Because that's not 9 months. That would be probably closer to 7 months.
Right.
I didn't do the math, but that's probably it.
Right. And that's part of the tweaking that I referred to that's necessary to have this make sense, so that when we're talking about a presumptive minimum sentence, it's not 25% of the term of confinement, but 25% of the
presumptive minimum.
The term of imprisonment. Mm-hmm. So that we have to really tweak the statute in two places. One is where you've identified there, and the other, of course, is in 2B6, because that 75% is appearing as a maximum, and we're now pulling it out as a calculation of the minimum.
Now, tweaking it in that way is in some ways inconsistent with your client's interests, that is, or defense interests, because you're extending the period of supervision to a larger number than arguably this statute D provides. Arguably, 25% of the length of confinement would be about 7 months in this case, and you're saying, no, we should tweak it to 9 months.
Right. It's not as favorable. However, as we know, the task in construing a statute is to try to discern what the legislature's intent was, and I have a hard time believing that the legislature intended that the three-year presumptive minimum was really something less than 3 years.
Well, it's to your client's interest because under your calculation he gets 27 months in confinement instead of 36 months.
Exactly.
So he's got 9 months out on the street. He may have less total time. And under the state's view, he's got 9 months on the street under supervision either way. So what you're doing here, under your interpretation, is giving him 9 months less in prison.
That's right.
9 months less in a prison.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Ms. Hagopian, and thank you, Mr. Frymuth, for giving us a very interesting lesson on truth in sentencing. We are in recess until 1:45 for our third case. How was Mr. Shire's party, Ms. Hagopian? Was it good? Good. When is his last day?
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. found out that it was to change her briefcase around to...
Well, they go into...
I think maybe
well,
she...
Well, then what happened is actually they don't ask.
What are they doing?
Thank you.